at the moment, for every 100 unemployed people, there is 122 vacancies out there. So you got to make sure that you have the broadest range possible of people that feel comfortable to apply, right?
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. On today's episode, I am talking to Maureen Brinkmann. Maureen is the Head of People and Culture at SkyDreams, and they recently started their own HR consultancy for small businesses and startups. They are based in the Netherlands, but today, more so than about the weather, we're talking about job descriptions and how to make them more inclusive. Among other topics, we will cover why it is important to be mindful about language when drafting job descriptions, what elements of job descriptions are sensitive to the language we use, what language elements, so jargon, specific ways of addressing people, might not be good to use in inclusive job descriptions, what strategies TA and HR professionals can use to assess their job descriptions, how to find a middle ground with roles where a certain set of qualifications might be a hard requirement while still ensuring inclusivity, how to measure the effectiveness of inclusive job descriptions, and other best practices and advice that recruiters like you can do tomorrow to make their job descriptions more inclusive. Now, without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome, Maureen. It's so great to have you on the podcast today.
Hey, Katharina, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. It's the last week of summer now, so we'll enjoy it.
Yes, we're recording this quite a few weeks in advance of when it comes out, so we're still enjoying the hot weather in the Netherlands. But today we're going to speak about not only the weather, but also about job descriptions and how we can make them more inclusive. They carry a lot of weight as they're oftentimes the first point of contact that a candidate has with a company, depending on if you are sourcing or if you have inbound, obviously. But before we dive into the topic, I would love for you, Maureen, to give a quick introduction to yourself and your expertise on the matter.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Maureen, obviously. I've been an HR professional for over a decade now. I've always loved the balance of the business and the people, and especially making sure that if you have the right people in place, that's how you can be successful as a business. I think that also ties really nicely in with the subject, because you need to have this really great group of people, and a diverse group generally gives you the best results. All the data is there. I don't think that's for today. But being a person, I'm part of the LGBTQ plus community. I identify as non-binary. So for me, the job description is super important, because many job descriptions that I see online, I would never apply to because I feel like I cannot belong at the company for very minor things in the job ad. Whereas surely these companies aren't trying to exclude me. And I think that it's very important, therefore, to make sure that you have a really inclusive job ad so that everybody feels comfortable straight away and acknowledges or feels confident to apply to a certain role.
Yeah, that's a great introduction to our topic and to yourself.
Thanks.
That's great. A bit more on the general side still, why is inclusive recruitment so important, not only for you personally, but also I think at large, why is it such a topic that we should talk about?
I think purely from a business perspective, at the moment, for every 100 unemployed people, there is 122 vacancies out there. So you got to make sure that you have the broadest range possible of people that feel comfortable to apply, right? And besides that, be human. I know. I mean, if you have a company, you want to make sure that everybody feels like they can belong there. And I think that, like you said in your introduction as well, it's your first point of contact. So it's important so that everybody feels like they can belong at your company and that you as a company can, yeah, get your highest numbers as well, because all the data is there. The diverse teams make for the best profits.
Yeah, yeah, great summary. I think inclusive recruitment is really where it starts, right? You can't have an inclusive culture. You can't have business success if you're not taking care of the people. And the way that you get employees is you hire them in hopefully the most inclusive way possible, so you can make sure that you create an environment that where everyone wants to come to work and wants to be productive. So I think there's really no way around it. My hope is that we'll get to a place where recruitment is by itself inclusive. But until then, we'll just talk about inclusive recruitment and see how we can make it more inclusive. I think that's where this whole idea of this podcast and this series in particular stems from.
It really starts with understanding it as well, right? And acknowledging that it's not a difficult topic, but it's very difficult to achieve. And because for a lot of people, it's something they don't really know about. If you don't have the idea of what inclusive language means, then how can you start with being inclusive? So it's also a lot of not knowing what it actually means and where it starts.
Yeah, I want to put my hook into what you just said and ask you sort of bluntly, what is inclusive language then? If we now talk about inclusive job descriptions, that probably entails language. So what does that mean?
I think it starts with gender neutral language. And the most simple one is he, she, because therefore you already say that there's only the possibility to be either male or female. That's, I think, the easiest black and white thing that you can find in job ads still. And it is such an easy one to replace. If you would just put they there, then males would be comfortable, females would be comfortable, non-binary people would be comfortable, and it looks better as well, I would say.
To put it more broadly, maybe inclusive language is taking out the coloring of specific language, because that sort of, maybe that makes it more clear if you want all types of people who identify as all different types of identify as different types of personalities, regardless of their gender, sexual orientation, what have you. If you want them to apply, then using such colored languages can be really discriminatory, but we'll get into that a little bit later as well. I think we're going to have lots to talk about on that topic. But why do you think it is so important to be mindful about the language when we are drafting job descriptions?
I think it's important to be mindful of the language because you want to address the broadest candidate pool as possible. So you really want to make sure that everybody that has the very strict qualifications, I'm sure we're going to talk about that bit as well, that if they have that they feel like, yes, I can apply here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. How do you create that awareness? I think lots of people might think, oh, you can just throw something on the page and then that's fine, right?
I mean, I think that if you want to get that really big talent pool, it starts with your job ad. And I think that it's really important that you iterate on your process as well. So make that job ad, get a diverse team in place to look at it, screen it, see how comfortable they feel with it. And start by putting it online and really see what kind of people are responding to it. So if you have a tracking system, that obviously makes your life a little easier because it will give you the data. But if you don't, Google Sheets can be your friend. Because if you see that you only have a certain gender that applies, or people from a certain ethnic background, or if it's people that are in the same age, then perhaps these things, if you reread your job, it can be, oh yeah, actually, we are talking about how amazing our pension plan is. And a lot of older people think about that way more than younger people, perhaps. And therefore, they are only applying. Or we say that people have to be native speakers. That is, native is very discriminatory. And especially when it comes to English, we shouldn't use the word native because there are so many people that speak English fluently. And fluent English is well enough for most of the job ads. So I think that is when you can measure what you found and then, yeah, look back at the data that's presented themselves.
Yeah. Diving a little bit deeper into that topic, how do you think, or what strategies do you think can professionals, HR, TA professionals alike use to assess whether their job descriptions are sort of tailored to their vision of what it should be or really to what the profile actually needs to be for any given job?
Yeah, so I think the importance is that the job ad itself should always be created by a diverse team because your TA or your HR professional, they'll have a certain style of writing and that might apply better to a certain group of people. And if you would invite a diverse team to look at the job ad, that also gives you really great insights on what these diverse people think of the job ad that you made. And you can rewrite it that way so that it applies to both of the people. Besides that, obviously, you have tons of tools nowadays. I mean, AI is obviously going to be super helpful for this. I mean, we've seen at the Equality Summit that they're not fully there yet when it comes to certain gender biases. But the tool is working really hard on that. So it can definitely already help you with putting it in tools like ChatGPT and say, hey, can you double check if there's any bias in this ad? So make sure that you use the technology that is available as well as your internal group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you then, I think that's a great recommendation because I think lots of people would take a shortcut with ChatGPT so widely and well, freely available to yeah. say, well, just write me a job ad and then I'll just post it out. That might be because of the inherent bias that is sort of built into the algorithm by what we feed it, sort of that data pool. Would you then say it's a better approach to let it be checked instead of getting a first draft from ChatGPT?
I think it's fine to use ChatGPT for a first draft, but I think it's always important to also let it check by the diverse team of people because a job description isn't only, hey, we're looking for a customer success manager. These are the recommendations. Make sure that the language is as unbiased as possible. But you also want to present a bit of your culture in there. And I think that's why it's important to always get the diverse team to look at it for sure.
Yeah. When you say diverse team, what exactly could we understand in that term?
I think a different group of genders, potentially races or ethnical backgrounds. It might be age groups, because like I said, pension might be interesting for a certain group, whereas parental leave is also something that really is important to a large group of people. And I think by getting that information from the people in your organization that have a different background really can help you and build this beautiful job description that can get you the broadest range of candidates possible.
Yeah. Now we spoke a little bit already about benefits, but also then requirements. So where do you think inclusive language plays the biggest role in job description? So what part of that description is most important that we pay attention to when drafting it?
I think the requirements. Mm-hmm. What you see a lot with the requirements is that quite traditionally, almost I'd say by now, is that a bachelor or master is getting asked. That doesn't say anything about performance and therefore it's void to put it in there. And also there are tons of people that, you know, never had the opportunity to study. And But perhaps they have built a beautiful experience and you're excluding them because of a paper that they didn't get and a paper that doesn't say anything about performance. And I think that is very important with that. The same goes for asking a certain amount of years of experience. Again, years of experience doesn't say someone is a great performer. And these are the things to be really mindful of when you, I think, write down the job requirements. And it goes as well for certain words like work hard, play hard mentality. That is a bit of a like also salesy boys club kind of mentality, generally speaking. Obviously, it doesn't go for everyone, but there's a lot of people that will not feel part of that kind of culture. And again, that is a really weird requirement to have, because what does it even mean, really? You know? So I think these are the things that as a company you can really benefit from understanding what is a must have to perform well. And if it's a job ad for a lawyer, it probably makes sense that one of the must have is that they have extensive knowledge over a particular part of the law. Sure. I mean, those are the kind of things that you really should look for when you write down requirements, and not that you need to be a amazing team player that loves to play ping pong in the afternoon. Because, you know, if you are a developer or UX designer, do you need to be a team player that can play ping pong in the afternoon? Yeah, probably not. Think that is the thing where you can really make sure that you get to that broad range of people.
Yeah, that's a really good piece of advice, sort of assessing, okay, what's a must have and what is sort of a thing that comes with our culture that is a nice to have. You probably still mention it. It'll attract a certain kind of person, but make sure that it's not a non-negotiable, because then you're definitely falling into that trap of hiring the same people that you already have that you might, well, lacking diversity on other aspects that you don't have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything in terms of the jargon or language that is used in job description that we should absolutely stay away from? I know that you mentioned gendered language. You mentioned that sort of work hard, play hard mentality piece. Is there anything else that you think, or that you see often, where you think, oh, maybe not?
I think the corporate jargon, especially for entry-level jobs, if you would write in there, you talk about KPIs and OKRs and it's an entry-level role, or if it's a Polish-speaking role, and then you're talking about these English acronyms, corporate English acronyms, then it might be that people are like, I don't know what it means, but it seems to be important because it's a requirement that apparently I can work with that, but I don't know what it means. I think really try to stay away from acronyms as much as possible. Try to explain it in a way, if you do work with OKRs or KPIs, try to explain it in a way that it really makes sense for people. Because that should be doable if you work with those kind of tools. I think that is a good addition to making sure you have the gender neutral languages, as well as language that attracts a certain gender more than another gender.
Yeah, I think that's a really good addition, to just stay away from those industry terms, because you can still pick them up once you start the job.
Yeah.
When we talk now about junior positions, I don't think that that's very much where finding a middle ground for sort of looking at certain qualifications and then also inclusivity is as important. But you might have very technical roles or sort of niche roles where there's a few hard requirements. How do you then still make sure that there's a clear understanding of the role on the one side, and you're being inclusive to a broad range of people, but you're also making sure that you put in, okay, no, but these are the hard requirements. How do you find that middle ground, do you think?
I mean, I think that everybody understands that if you want to fly a plane, you should have taken severe training and have received a diploma certification for that. And I think it's still inclusive to ask for those things because of the safety that comes with it. So it relates back to must-haves and really being honest about what a must-have is. And the accuracy in that is saying you need to have this specific certification because that is mandatory by law when it comes to flying a plane. But also if you have to set up certain ISO certifications, makes sense that you have to know about them. And that is, I think it's a difficult one. It will always say difficult one because you also don't want to say that experience doesn't mean anything, because experience does, you know, does mean something. But I think the importance is when it comes to, for instance, like experience, is being accurate. What kind of experience? Because if you say you have to have managed a team for 10 years, why 10 years? Probably what you need is someone that can either manage a new team or a team that is being built up by the ground by you, or you know how to manage a team that is dealing with a lot of stress. So try to become accurate again about what the experience should then bring to the table instead of just have experience.
Yeah. So two things then that you mentioned. On the one hand, be very specific in what exactly you're looking for, and then be very clear on what's the must-have.
Yeah.
So if you are listening and you're a recruiter and you think, well, my hiring managers come with a laundry list of requirements that they think are so important, how do I make sure that I assess what's the must-haves? How do I go about that? What would you suggest to recruiters who might have a laundry list?
I think that perhaps what you can do with your hiring manager is start to prioritize them. Because that way you're not immediately saying, sorry, we're not going to put all of these in there, so you got to choose. But if you ask them to prioritize it, it gives them the first understanding of, okay, like these are the top three things that are important. From there, obviously, you as a recruiter can say, oh, but why a bachelor degree? What's the importance of that? Is it not that this person needs to understand economics, for instance? Someone can understand economics without having a business degree in economics. So when you have that priority list, which I think is a very fair thing to ask from a hiring manager, you can then almost negotiate with them. It's like, hey, obviously what we're trying to do is get this broad range of candidates for you, because most hiring managers like to choose. So I'm here to help you, to give you the opportunity to choose. So are you okay if I experiment with your top three or your top five and put those in there first? I know your list, so I'll make sure that in the initial phone call, I'll double check a few items on the list that you think are important for the candidate. But as an initial thing to put online, what are the must-haves that you think are non-negotiable? Because that list, generally speaking, as almost everything is negotiable when they feel that it's the right fit.
Yeah, yeah. And that's also probably then a good moment to check for the level of inclusivity that you're bringing to the table in these requirements, and check your hiring managers back as you say, well, does it really require a bachelor's degree, or do we just need to know that they have demonstrated knowledge of that field?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think the whole degree thing is just such a it's just an easy thing to grasp to. Whereas if you continue the conversation, then many people wouldn't say it's that important. Or if you would refer to like, hey, but we've had other people in the team that had these requirements, but they weren't actually the top performers. So is that the kind of thing that you think is the must have? And they're hard conversations, especially I think the degree one in a lot of companies I've worked for, it's been such a mandatory requirement. Whereas, I mean, in the Netherlands, it's such a normal thing to have access to studies. And even though in the Netherlands, not everybody has a large group of people do, it's not that way in the rest of the world. And in the Netherlands, we had, God, I don't know how many studies we have. So how do we even measure that this study is the same as the one that you did in Germany? And if that has the same level of knowledge or skill set? Because, yeah, if you ask people how much they've gained from their studies, I don't think a lot of people be like, yeah, that is really where, due to my studies, I know what to do. I don't think a lot of people will actually say that. So let's try to go back to the what makes a good performer in your team.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I won't go into too much detail, but it's also obviously a question of privilege. Yeah, I'm privileged enough to be able to go to university and get a degree. That doesn't say much more about your expertise or your aptitude for the job than any other sort of piece of paper would. Absolutely. So that's one. And then the other one is, it's obviously an easy one to put on a job ad just because it is that external stamp of approval on the candidate that an accredited institution gives. But do we actually need it? Or do we really want to focus more so on what makes a person successful in the job instead of having a stamp of approval by someone else saying, it's an extended way of having a reference.
Yeah. And I mean, references are also very clearly proven to not be useful at all.
Yeah, there's another one that you might want to consider not having as a request.
No.
How do you measure then the effectiveness of inclusive job descriptions? Say company X now started being more aware that job descriptions need to be more inclusive. How can we measure how effective that shift or that change is?
I think that there are a few different ways to go about it. You can consider putting two jobs online, where one you really, really focus on inclusive language, where you try to do everything to address that pool and have the job ad as you have it today. I think that's a fairly simple one to do a bit of testing. I think what also really helps, what I do a lot is iterate throughout the process, put it online, check what comes in. After 2 weeks, make some tweaks. Generally, like, I try to shorten it from where we started, because that also really helps with hiring managers as well when they come with that long list of everything that is so super important. And then after 2 weeks, I'm like, hey, you know, I've scrolled through it on my mobile and it takes me like 20 seconds just scrolling to get to the bottom. How open are we to shorten it a little? What can we remove? And when you remove certain things, that is also where you can address it and like, oh, no, I think we should remove this one and iterate. What happens after that change? And that, I think, is a very simple way of measuring it. I think, generally speaking, HR and TA, we're not experimenters. We write policies and we do them, and then maybe in a year we reassess them. And I think when it comes to recruitment and inclusivity, it is super important to experiment, because it's quite new still, I would say. It's still quite new to understand what it means and what attracts people more. And I mean, the new generation has different requirements already. And That's why we, I think, need to be way more flexible and change that job ad regularly to find out what matches best with the pools that we need.
Yeah. My last question, we're already at the last question. We've spoken a lot about best practices, tips that you already shared. Is there anything else that you would tell our listeners that they can do tomorrow to make job descriptions more inclusive?
The gender one is the easiest fix. I think one of the examples that I gave earlier is the changing native to fluent. That makes a huge difference in your candidate pool because, yeah, people won't respond if it says native, which makes sense. But the second you change it to fluent, you're like, you're getting way more candidates to come in. I think that's a super easy, simple one that will give you more candidates and that that we've seen has created a big impact. And we also see that we're trying our best at one of the companies that I work for to really create the diverse teams. And that sometimes means that even we deliberately choose to write a job ad that will attract more people from a certain age group or from different genders. For instance, a simple one is your parental leave policy that will, if you give that a good place in your job ad, there is a likely chance, and we have seen it, that you will get more people to respond that are in a certain age group. Also more females because it has a bigger impact on them couples that identify as non-binary or that have same-sex marriage because they can see like, hey, what will this new baby do for our life and how will it be addressed at this company that I work for? Because that might be on their mind already when they join your company because maybe they have plans to get a baby in the near future.
Yeah, that's a great nugget of wisdom that you also just shared in terms of inclusivity doesn't only sort of pertain to the language that you use, but also the way that you structure your job ad, right? And if you give it a prominent place, any certain element, that can definitely change how applicants will react or will apply or not apply.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's always such a, maybe fake is a bit too harsh, but when companies like have this job ad, like la 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 la, nothing about anything that would say anything about diversity or equity or inclusion. And at the bottom, we are an equal employer. And you're like, huh? I feel like the most unimportant things are generally at the bottom. So are you though? It makes me question more, is this the truth? Whereas if in the beginning of your job ad, you're like, hey, we're super diverse, really care for that. We want to make sure that people belong. We love working with people from different backgrounds. If it is a prominent and important part of your company, place it at the top. That is where this group of people that cares for it. And if you're hiring millennial, Gen Z, Gen Y, I think Monster did a survey and 88% of that group said, if there's not anything in place for DEI, I'll probably not respond. So make it prominent. And if you work in a company, ask if there is a project team that wants to start up to help you build these job ads, because I'm sure there will be people in your company that care for it. So I guess the biggest advice, don't do everything alone. That is the opposite of diverse hiring.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice. I think on that, we can definitely end this episode very successfully. Thank you so much for joining me on this one. Lots to learn. I learned a lot from you already. I think our listeners will take away a lot from this as well. I hope that you also enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. I love this topic. And it's always fun to talk about. And I'm always happy to help as well. So if there are any listeners that want me to help them, I'm more than happy to do that.
That's great. Yeah, we'll pop all of your details and any resources that you would like to share in the show notes. And you can find Maureen on LinkedIn. I know she's, they are quite active there. So I'll link it as well in the show notes for anyone and everyone who listened today. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast again. And I hope to see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye.